Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hit.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Dan Friedel, John Russell, and Brian Lynn. Later, Katie Weaver and Ashley will present the next part in our series on America's national parks. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
As gas and food prices rise in the United States, some families are worried about having to pay for something else in the fall, lunch for their children at school. For at least the last two school years, many parents did not have to worry about preparing or buying their school-aged children lunch. That is because emergency government funding during the early part of the coronavirus pandemic included food aid for children. The aid covered lunch for children during the school year and during the summer for many families. But the free lunch funding is set to end in several states before the start of the next school year. Before the pandemic, Kate Murphy of Vermont and her family did not have enough money to pay for their four children to buy lunch at school. Instead, they purchased lunch foods in large amounts and sent their children to school with food each morning. But when the pandemic hit, the U.S. government made lunch money available to most schools. The support came at a critical time for the Murphy family because Kate's husband had lost his job. Because of the free lunch program, the Murphys had one less financial concern. But now, the family may have to worry about lunch again. Murphy said her family earns a bit too much money to qualify for free lunches based on the old program's income rules. Experts say the end of the school lunch aid and other programs that helped families save money means more will have to get help from food banks. Food banks provide meals and food for no cost to families and individuals in need. Vince Hall is a government relations officer for Feeding America, a group of food banks across the U.S. He said, "Many families are now facing a very difficult reality of having to choose between feeding their kids or filling up their gas tanks or purchasing medicine." The U.S. Agriculture Department oversees the school meal program. Cindy Long is an administrator for the department's Food and Nutrition Service. She said that during the pandemic, the number of children getting free meals increased from 20 million to 30 million. A summer meal program in 2020 gave out 1.3 billion meals and snacks. The total cost was $4.1 billion. That was eight times greater than program costs from a year earlier. President Joe Biden recently signed a bill that should keep summer meal programs running in the same way they did during the first two summers of the pandemic. Some states are using their own money to make the free meals permanent. California and Maine did that last year. Massachusetts and Colorado are working on state proposals that would provide food aid for at least one more school year. Vermont, where the Murphy family lives, said it would use extra money in the education budget to fund food aid for the upcoming year. Our kids have so much to worry about these days, and food shouldn't be one of them, Kate Murphy said. On a recent day at the Albert D. Lawton School in Vermont, students ate pizza and salad with their friends. One student, Ethan Pringle, said, "It is hard to learn when you feel hungry." "Not everybody has the same situation at home," he said, "so I think free lunch. It makes it easier for everybody." I'm Dan Friedel.
The United States celebrates its Independence Day on July 4th. John Adams, who later became America's second president, wrote to his wife in 1776 that the day would be remembered with fireworks and celebrations from one end of this continent to the other. But the day he was talking about was July 2nd, 1776, not July 4th. July 2nd is the day the Continental Congress of the original 13 colonies voted for independence from Britain. Congress did not officially sign the Declaration of Independence, mainly written by Thomas Jefferson, until 2 days later. Pauline Meyer was an historian who wrote the 1997 book American Scripture, Making the Declaration of Independence. She wrote that in early July of 1777, members of the Continental Congress nearly forgot that it had been a year since they declared their freedom from the British. They remembered on July 3rd. It was too late to celebrate on July 2nd, so they decided to mark the country's independence with a celebration the following day, July 4th. The Pennsylvania Evening Post of Philadelphia reported, "Yesterday, the 4th of July, being the anniversary of the independence of the United States of America, was celebrated in this city with demonstrations of joy and festivity." At night, the Post said, "there was a grand exhibition of fireworks, and the city was beautifully illuminated." The tradition of celebrating Independence Day started to expand after the War of 1812 against Britain. Such celebrations were mostly held on July 4th. John Adams, however, still believed that Americans should celebrate their independence on July 2nd. Historians say Adams reportedly turned down invitations to take part in July 4th events until the day he died. Adams died on July 4th, 1826. That same day, Thomas Jefferson also died. The two men and former presidents were friends as well as rivals. They both died on the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. In 1870, the U.S. Congress made July 4th an official holiday. In July 1776, the U.S. was a country of 2.5 million people. It is now a country of 332 million, the U.S. Census reports. These days, Americans celebrate Independence Day with fireworks and other festivities. The yearly 4th of July fireworks show in New York City is the biggest in the nation. It can be seen in the neighboring states of New Jersey and Connecticut. It is also broadcast nationwide on television. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, organizers are holding a 16-day festival of fireworks, music, and food to celebrate the holiday. The small village of Lewis, Delaware, celebrates its coastal history with the Independence Day Boat Parade. This year, officials in Atlanta, Georgia, are closing roads in the southern city for the traditional AJC Peachtree Road Race. A total of 60,000 runners are permitted to take part in the popular Independence Day event. In Los Angeles, California, movie lovers can choose to celebrate the holiday by watching old Hollywood films from small boats on Castaic Lake or from the grassy area of the historic Hollywood Forever Cemetery. And far north in Anchorage, Alaska, Independence Day traditions include a pancake breakfast, baseball games, and late-night fireworks. With 19 hours of daylight this time of year, Anchorage's fireworks show does not start until 11 at night.
Los Angeles, California, and Mumbai, India, are both famous for movies, clothing, and traffic. But the two large cities are similar in another way. Large cats live in and around them. Los Angeles and Mumbai are the world's only major cities where large cats, mountain lions in one, leopards in the other, live. But Audra Huffmeyer, a biologist at the University of California, Los Angeles, predicted, in the future, there's going to be more cities like this as urban areas further encroach on natural habitats. 20 years ago, scientists in Los Angeles placed a tracking collar on a large male mountain lion that was from Santa Monica Mountains, an area next to the city. They named the big cat P1. With GPS and camera traps, the scientists followed P1 for 7 years. Seth Riley of the National Park Service was part of the effort. Riley said 2009 was the last time they learned about P1. There must have been a fight. We found his collar, blood on a rock, and never saw him again. He was reasonably old, Riley said. Since then, Riley has helped put collars on around 100 more mountain lions in Los Angeles. The big cats in the Los Angeles area have not caused any human deaths, but recorded one attack on a child in 2021. The biggest threat to mountain lions turns out to be inbreeding, mating between members of the same family. Living in small territories separated by highways has caused some males to mate with daughters and granddaughters. That has led to genetic problems such as fertility issues and unusual tails. In Mumbai, one of the world's most densely populated cities, about 50 leopards have lived in a space suited for 20. Yet the big cats keep mostly out of sight. Vidya Atria is the director of the Wildlife Conservation Society in India. Because these animals are so secretive, you don't know much about them. You can't just observe them, Atria said. The leopard's main area is centered around Sanjay Gandhi National Park. The protected area is surrounded on three sides by people, including an area that is home to 100,000 people and around 10 leopards. Leopards in Mumbai mainly hunted wild dogs that go to garbage dumps outside the forest. They mostly attacked people when cornered or attacked, but in 2010, 20 people in Mumbai died in leopard attacks, said Jagannath Kambal, an official at Mumbai's protected forest. Huffmeyer, who studies mountain lions, said, "If we want to keep these large carnivores around on the planet, we have to learn to live with them." I'm John Russell.
Scientists have developed an artificial photosynthesis process that can grow plants in the dark. The process is designed to provide a new way to produce food as worldwide demand grows. Photosynthesis involves plants taking in energy from the sun to produce life-supporting carbon and oxygen. The process is important to support the growth of many plants. But scientists have estimated that only about 1% of energy from the sun is actually captured by plants that produce food. Researchers report in a new study that the artificial photosynthesis method they developed performed up to 18 times more efficiently in growing some foods, and the process can be carried out in complete darkness. Results of the study recently appeared in the publication Nature Food. The research team included members from the University of California, Riverside, and the University of Delaware. Researchers used an electrolyzer system to turn carbon dioxide, electricity, and water into acetate. Acetate is the main compound found in many household products, including vinegar. The electrolyzer process effectively turned 57% of carbon molecules in carbon dioxide into acetate, University of Delaware researchers said in a statement. The resulting acetate mixture was then used as food to grow plants in the dark. The researchers experimented with 9 different food plants. These included lettuce, rice, peas, tomatoes, pepper, and tobacco. The team reported that all these plants were able to take in carbon from the acetate. Experiments were also carried out with algae, yeast, and a fungus that produces mushrooms. The study found that for algae, the process was 4 times more efficient than growing the material photosynthetically with sunlight, and yeast production was 18 times more efficient than the usual process involving sugar collected from corn. Lettuce produced the best results from artificial photosynthesis out of all the food crops tested. We were able to grow food-producing organisms without any contributions from biological photosynthesis, said the co-writer of the study, Elizabeth Hahn. She is a doctoral candidate at UC Riverside's Jinkerson Lab. Hahn added that the process is much more efficient at turning energy into food than the biological photosynthesis methods, which have taken place for millions of years. The researchers also reported that the process increased energy efficiency too. When used together with a solar cell to power the electrolyzer, the method required just 1/4 the energy to grow the same amount of food created by sunlight and natural photosynthesis. The scientists said their method could help fight the effects of climate change that are making traditional crop growing more difficult. Drought, floods, and reduced land availability would be less of a threat to global food security if crops for humans and animals grew in less resource-intensive, controlled environments, the researchers noted. I'm Brian Lynn.
The state of Utah is home to 5 major national parks. They are among the most famous parks in the United States. Our national parks journey brings us to the southeastern part of the state. Here you will find narrow canyons, steep cliffs, and hidden river valleys. Welcome to Zion National Park.
Zion sits within a desert landscape. The 260-kilometer-long Virgin River runs through it. It provides water for more than 1,000 kinds of plants to grow and over 100 kinds of animals to live, including the desert tortoise, desert bighorn sheep, and mountain lions. River water has also carved out the area's spectacular canyons and gorges. One of them, called Zion Canyon, stretches more than 20 kilometers through the park. In some places, it is more than 600 meters deep. At its most narrow point, it is just 6 meters across. Zion is one of the 10 most visited parks in the country. Travelers from America and around the world come here to explore its canyons, climb its steep walls, and walk its dramatic trails.
Zion's extraordinary beauty affected early Mormon settlers. Members of the religious group came to the area beginning in the 1850s. They thought it looked like heaven. They named the land after a place from the Bible, Zion. Zion means sanctuary or refuge in ancient Hebrew. Mormons were not, of course, the first people to explore the area. Experts say humans first arrived around 12,000 years ago. They hunted very large animals, like mammoths, giant sloths, and camels. Climate change and overhunting caused these animals to die out about 8,000 years ago. Humans changed their methods. They hunted smaller animals and gathered other food. Some 2,000 years ago, a culture centered on what we now call Zion began to form. Scientists know these people as the Virgin Anasazi. They settled in the area and grew crops. They used the water from the Virgin River and depended on the rich diversity of native plants and animals. Over time, many Native American groups called the area home, including the Southern Paiute. The Southern Paiutes called the area Makuntuweap. In their language, the name meant Straight Canyon. The United States Congress moved to protect the area beginning in the early 1900s. In 1909, it became a national monument. It was called Makuntuweap National Monument. President William Taft established the national monument. He described the land as a labyrinth of remarkable canyons with highly ornate and beautifully colored walls, in which are plainly recorded the geological events of past ages. In 1918, the National Monument became a national park. And in 1919, Congress changed its name to Zion, the name used by the Mormons.
Today, almost 3 million people visit Zion National Park each year. Driving is restricted in much of the park during busy months. Instead, visitors travel in small buses that take them to areas where they can walk on paths into the wild areas. Walking is the best way to explore Zion. The park offers visitors many different kinds of paths. Some are short and easy. One easy walk is almost 2 kilometers. It takes hikers to a clear pool of water and waterfalls. Other hikes take most people all day to complete. Some are not advisable for people who are afraid of high places. A hike called Angel's Landing is considered one of the most exciting hikes in America. The trail leads to the top of a rock formation that stands more than 450 meters above the canyon floor. Toward the top of the rock, the walking path becomes extremely narrow. On both sides are very steep cliffs. Hikers can hold on to a rope for increased safety. Most hikers say the views from Angel's Landing make the difficult and dangerous experience worth it. Some visitors favor the lower parts of Zion National Park. One popular area is known as the Narrows. The Narrows is the narrowest part of Zion Canyon. The area has extremely tall canyon walls and unusual hanging gardens. These green areas of wildflowers, ferns, and mosses grow out of the sandstone walls. If you want to explore the Narrows, you must be ready to get wet. Hiking in the Narrows means walking next to, and even in, the Virgin River. If water levels are high, walking in the river can be extremely difficult. Sometimes, hikers may be waist high in water.
Even near the canyon floor, hikes at Zion can be dangerous. The great amount of rock in the area does not absorb water. As a result, sudden floods, called flash floods, are a serious threat. People can help prepare themselves as much as possible for the dangers of Zion National Park at the visitor center. But the risks come with great rewards. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.